On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, we are joined by Gavin Shaw of Locked On Knicks to talk about the Knicks-Nets game, breaking down Spencer Dinwiddie's great performance, Julius Randle having an out-of-nowhere great game, plus Gavin gives us an idea for Theo Pinson that might surprise you. Coming up, Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to a special crossover edition of the Locked On Nets and Locked On Knicks podcast, recording live from an undisclosed location in Murray Hill, aka Josh's apartment. We've got myself, Marcus Barahal, here, co-host of Locked On Nets. We've got Josh Bass here with me. Woo! Every single podcast. We've also got a special guest from Locked On Knicks here to gloat about the Knicks 94-82 win, I'm sure, and to rub it in, rub some salt in the wounds, probably, is Locked On Knicks co-host Gavin Shaw. Gavin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Did you guys know this was the greatest defensive performance in NBA history?
Or at least this season? Just by field goal percentage. Yeah, if we look at field goal percentage, it's actually not. And given that the Knicks have put out a terrible product on the court for the last 20 years, clearly they don't know advanced metrics. So makes a lot of sense why you're only bringing up field goal percentage.
But right, you know, Kevin? The Nets only have like 4 more wins over the last 20 years than the Knicks do.
Is that true?
That is. I saw a stat on it recently. I was surprised it wasn't more.
Well, we're getting into it. Pretty quickly here. To the game itself, like I mentioned, 94-82, the Knicks came out on top in this one. And like Gavin mentioned, I don't know if a defensive battle is the right word for it. It was kind of both teams just missing shots, not really creating any offense to speak of outside of a select few guys, Julius Randle for the Knicks and Spencer Dinwiddie for the Nets, though Dinwiddie mostly did it at the free throw line. Gavin, I know you mentioned during the game this was an atypical performance for Julius Randle. Was there anything specific to you that seemed like it clicked for him, or did this just seem kind of like a fluke?
Seemed a little bit like a fluke. I mean, he was draining threes. He had that one, I think, early in the second quarter that hit every part of the rim before going in, and I followed that up with an audible yelp. it was totally fluky. He does not typically hit those shots. I don't know if he's ever going to hit those shots again, but against the Brooklyn Nets, there was something magical in the air. Finished 14 of 26 from the field, 5 of 9 from distance, 33 points, 8 rebounds, drew some compliments for the Elder Eagle. It was just spectacular for him.
Yeah, 0 free throw attempts, which, I mean, 33 points, he shot over 50% from the field, but still took 26 shots to get those 33, so not super efficient. Josh, I mentioned Dinwiddie had it going. He was mostly really having it going from the line. No one on the Nets shot well. It seems like no one can create a shot, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bleak right now. Obviously, given the injuries that this Nets team has faced, and even losing a guy like David Nwaba, who's not going to be a top shot creator, but still someone that can make things happen, you're seeing now the limitations of guys like Taurean Prince, Garrett Temple, Wilson Chandler, Cardio King, but he's short on every jumper. Tell me how that makes sense, Marcus. It was really a tough performance. I mean, we've talked about how Prince has really struggled in the last few games. 1 of 10 from three. Those were all of his shots, actually. You know, like, he doesn't have much of an ability to get to the line. He can't really go to the basket. And if his three-point shot isn't falling, and that's going to be the case when you take a lot of forced attempts that aren't necessarily clean looks, it's going to lead to tough percentages all around. And obviously this Nets team isn't going to shoot this poorly for most games. This is a complete anomaly given how well their system usually looks. But given the lack of talent on this roster right now, they're prone to having games like this. And we saw that obviously with the Spurs game and Atlanta getting down really big early before making that huge comeback in the fourth quarter.
Did you guys see Henry Ellenson nearly had a 4 trillion? He missed 2 threes, but outside of that, did not record a statistic in 4 minutes.
And that's does it count as a trillion if you take a shot but miss it?
No, it doesn't. You're not supposed to take any shots.
Interesting. Well, Josh, you mentioned sorry.
Are you really interested?
To pivot from that,
if you're interested. I feel like you would have talked more about it. But go ahead.
I'm very interested. Josh, you mentioned Prince. All of his shots were from three. The Nets took 50 threes in this game and 36 free throws. Only 78 shots total. So pretty much all their shots were from downtown. I remember one stretch where they missed a three, got an offensive rebound, kicked it back out, missed another three. Temple got an offensive rebound. Seemed like he was wide open under the basket, mm-hmm. dribbled it out, kicked it to, I think, Prince, who missed another three. do you think that this team needs to try to get inside more? I mean, they got a lot of free throws, but it was pretty much just Dinwiddie doing that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the other guys, Joe Harris has been attacking, but a guy like Prince maybe needs to vary up his game to try to, I don't know, throw the defense off a little more?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something that we'd like to see, but also he's not the most, like, physical guy. He's not very explosive. And, like, you see that with a lot of these Nets players, like Torian Prince, Temple, Harris to a very lesser extent, but, like, TLC, like, they're not the most physical guys. Yes, you have DeAndre Jordan and Jarrett Allen. You have Dinwiddie. You have Kurucs who can mix it up a bit, but the other guys aren't going to be great finishers at the rim. They don't necessarily want to mix it up. They're more comfortable from the outside. And especially, I think we've seen this in basically all of the Knicks and Nets matchups last year and this year. The Nets players are really afraid of going inside as with fear of getting blocked by Mitchell Robinson. And it's warranted because he is a really excellent defensive player, prone to fouling a lot. He had a really nice game tonight. Actually, only two fouls in his 28 minutes, which is probably...
he's gotten better.
Is that a career low for him?
No, Gavin? He's averaged about right around three a game for the last 2 weeks, so you can shut your mouth.
Really? I saw he fouled out in like 19 minutes a game or two ago.
That's fake news. No, he's been good. I was actually going to ask you guys so what you thought about him and what you your impressions were of the Knicks as a whole. Because, I mean, clearly, I mean, the storyline with the Knicks is they become a normal bad team under Mike Miller when they were exceptionally bad under David Fizdale. And that's significant progress. And it's interesting. I mean, there's this group of Knicks fans that's like, the sky is falling because they got blown out by Miami and Milwaukee. They were always going to get blown out by Miami and Milwaukee. And I think I mentioned this on our last Locked On Knicks podcast, but a friend of the show, Jonathan Macri, made a great point that the expectation for the Knicks should be and has been all year, they should be able to compete with average teams, which the Nets are. They should be able to beat the worst of the league, and they should probably get blown out by good teams. And that's kind of what you saw tonight when the Nets had just an exceptionally poor shooting game. But I was interested what you guys thought of this group of Knicks when they're a little bit better now under Miller.
Yeah, just speaking about Robinson specifically first, I thought that the matchups that Kenny Atkinson was choosing to play were pretty interesting, just because the Nets obviously start Jared Allen, and the Knicks start kind of like a bunch of power forwards. They start Taj Gibson, Julius Randle, Marcus Morris, even RJ Barrett's like pretty big. But they don't start a guy who would match up like well with Allen from a Nets perspective. It seems like Allen, you would want him on Robinson, but I felt like most of the time that Robinson was out there, he was matched up with DeAndre Jordan, which is like a big weakness for the Nets right now. I feel like DJ just like gets winded pretty easily, and I thought that that matchup was one that Robinson had the edge on kind of all night. He had a double-double off the bench for the Knicks, and I felt like he could kind of get an offensive rebound anytime he wanted. He had five of those. So, I mean, he's definitely impressive. Like Josh said, he's got to work on being more under control, which it seems like he's been doing more of. He did that in this game for sure. But yeah, I was a little bit confused as to Kenny's rotation in that respect.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point, Marcus, because I feel like with DJ, like when he's feeling motivated, and I think a lot of that's on the offensive end, he can be really dynamic. But as you said, he gets winded really easily, and that's going to lead to him switching screens a lot of the time. So he's out on the perimeter, and then you have Mitchell Robinson going up for an offensive board over like TLC or Temple or someone that he's able to completely overpower physically, and that's what's going to lead to a lot of the problems for the Nets. I mean, he was just a beast on the glass. I think in the second or third quarter, there was a string of like two or three possessions where he just got the offensive rebound and either went right back up or got fouled every time. He probably had, I think, the biggest impact, not even including box score, of any Knick besides Julius Randle's like insane shot making.
All right, and we will get into that and more after the break, but first a word from our sponsor, Casper. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/LockedNBA and using our promo code LockedNBA at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers.
We're back on Locked On Nets / Locked On Knicks. Mark Sparrowhall, Josh Bass, Gavin Shaw here, talking about the Knicks' win over the Nets. And Josh, you and I have noticed since Kyrie Irving, Caris LeVert have been out, the Nets have struggled with Spencer Dinwiddie as their only real playmaker. They've used Garrett Temple as the backup point guard. They tried Theo Pinson for a while. But Gavin, I wanted to ask you, just because you followed the team last year very closely, and the year before that, obviously. But this team was able to succeed and even thrive despite injuries last year. Like, when it was just D'Angelo Russell as the only ball handler, with LeVert out, with Dinwiddie out. But it seems like the team hasn't really flowed as well, just because it seems like last year the team had more offensive continuity, and this year it's kind of just Dinwiddie creating everything. What do you think the differences are between this year's team and last year's team?
I mean, I just think the roster's changed pretty dramatically, and guys like Ed Davis made a really significant impact last year, and DeAndre Jordan, I think in terms of counting stats, is similar. I would assume the plus-minus isn't quite the same, and I don't think he does the same tangential or intangible stuff that Davis brought to the table. But even more than that, I think this is just a roster that, I mean, we were talking about it during the game. If you're missing three of your four best players, that's eventually going to make an impact. Ideally, it doesn't all crumble against the New York Knicks, of all teams. Sorry, Knicks fans who are tuning in. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of my big takeaway. And I get your point that it sort of all flowed under Russell a season ago, but all in all, I mean, it's been good under Dinwiddie, right?
And yeah,
they played pretty well. Yeah,
they've definitely stayed afloat. I more just mean the offense specifically, like putting up this kind of showing, like even seeing the shooting numbers from Prince and from Temple the last few games outside of that Hawks game. They've just shot the ball really poorly, and it seemed like last year, even when the Nets were losing games to bad teams, they were losing games like 120-110.
Yeah, I mean, all I can point to, I'm trying to like remember like who the guys were for the Nets who were really scoring last year.
Yeah, I mean, like Damari Carroll was like able to get his own shot at times, but
draw a lot of fouls.
Because I was going to say, I mean, just the two names you said, I mean, if Torian Prince and Garrett Temple are the guys you're relying on, like night to night to night, it's not going to work. And that's sort of the situation the Nets are in. I mean, I give Atkinson and that entire team a whole lot of credit for staying afloat in an Eastern Conference that, I mean, not a lot of people talk about it, but up top is vicious, and even like some of the lower teams are like competitive night in and night out. So it's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world when Spencer Dinwiddie's your number one guy, I mean, and he's been exceptional. Joe Harris is all of a sudden the second best player on this team when he was nominally a role guy over the last couple of years. And the supporting cast genuinely isn't very good. I mean, I think they've been doing great overall. You just can't expect those guys to sustain it over this long of a stretch. And that's why I'd be a little bit worried about, I mean, the news that I don't know exactly how long Kyrie's going to be out, but it's potentially way longer than people thought, right?
Yeah. The only
it's positive, already been, yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. I mean, people thought it was going to be like day to day when it first happened. Now they're saying it might be another couple weeks. Caris LeVert at least seems like he's getting closer and closer to a return. So that's kind of the one thing that I think Nets fans and Josh, you and I are holding on to, is that maybe LeVert comes back, and if you can stagger him and Dinwiddie, have one of them on the court at all times, that could kind of solve this shot creation thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think even though LeVert definitely struggled to start the season, we all know his potential. And regardless of whether he's ever going to reach that ceiling, he's still going to be a huge upgrade on a lot of the guys they're throwing out in the bench right now. And getting him in more of a natural shot creator role, it's going to get other guys into more roles that they're comfortable with. So Garrett Temple is not going to have to bring up the ball as much. He can now so focus on spot-up shooting and creating off of someone else's penetration. And guys like DeAndre Jordan and Jarrett Allen are going to have easier looks as well. And I think that's going to make the rotation a little bit clearer. Obviously, you wish Kyrie is going to come back, but it's still going to make things a bit neater overall, and the rotation is going to have just more of a flow to it. I think it's going to give Kenny a lot more weapons. But Gavin, I'm curious to hear your take on this, because the Knicks obviously get this win tonight. You know, they're 8-24 right now. Like, how do you feel as someone that podcasts about the team day in and day out, 5 days a week, of course, on the Lockdown Podcast Network? Like, in these wins where they're led by, you know, Mitch had a nice game, but really it's kind of Julius Randle doing a lot of the damage, and then Peyton, Marcus Morris, of course, who looks like he's going to be someone that's going to be shipped off when it comes to the trade deadline in February. Like, do you like these? Like, are these wins more kind of gratifying for you than games where they lose and RJ showing signs of potential, Knox is doing a little something? Because, like, those guys really did nothing tonight. I mean, RJ was 2 of 10, had a couple nice plays, but overall was really quiet. Knox, I think, has really struggled in his second season, from what I can tell. Frank has been up and down, but overall looks like he's slumping recently. And Mitch, when he stays out of foul trouble, continues to be kind of a dynamic force inside.
Yeah, Frank, 5,014 minutes tonight. Not his best
effort. Did he Freaky Friday with Mitch?
Yeah, that's what happened. I'm going to have Alex ask about that next time he's at a game. Yeah, I mean, no, it's a great question. I don't really have a strong feeling either way. Because, I mean, I think the reality is, like, the Knicks' young players outside of RJ and Mitch just aren't sure things in terms of their NBA future. I mean, I think I've said this time and time again, but Ntilikina, if he ends up with the right team, there's no reason he shouldn't have a 12-year NBA career because he's that good defensively. And there's always a role for that type of guy. Kevin Knox, I don't know how to feel about him. I mean, last year was such a roller coaster where he was really, for the first half of the year, genuinely pretty good. One of the first podcasts we ever did on Locked On Knicks was we were predicting the all-star chances for all the young guys going forward, and I think he had far and away the highest on the team. Like, I was so sure that he was, if not a lock to be a star, he certainly had that upside. And there just haven't been any discernible improvements in his game. At the beginning of the season, he's playing with a lot more pace and showing a few more flashes as a playmaker and defensively, but that's fallen off and hasn't proven to be sustainable at all. I was hoping under Miller, who's known for his player development, who got guys like Dotson to the NBA, that I was going to shift a little bit. Obviously, he hasn't had a lot of time yet, but that's sort of the hope going forward. In terms of the more experienced guys, I take Julius Randle off this team for nothing right now. Like, I know he was excellent tonight, but it just doesn't do a whole lot for the Knicks.
He's not a positive value.
And well, the whole thing is just when you, I mean, just with the way, it's on the fact that the rest of the roster is constructed so poorly around him. And that's why, for my money, I would never, ever sign a guy like Julius Randle because he's not good enough to warrant building a team around him in any. The one situation is if you build your bench around him and only play him those minutes. But the Knicks clearly haven't done that. The front office has had some kind of mandate that he has to play a significant amount of time. And it's not beneficial to anyone. While Morris, I almost don't think they should trade him unless they somehow got a mid-first-round pick for him, because at certain points, he's the only guy keeping this offense alive, and it would be even more difficult on the young guys if you lose far and away the best shooter on the team.
Yeah, and but don't they have more opportunities then?
Sure, but it's against the defense that anyway. Was going to put four or five guys around the rim. Like, Morris is the one guy who draws any kind of attention. And you look at the lineups they're going to play without him. I mean, that means more Randle. It means more Gibson, who has slumped since a really good start. Bobby Portis, who didn't make one of his six shots.
But that's it. Also, yeah. Like, I feel like they could throw out a lineup of, like, let's say the four young guys, Frank, RJ, Knox, Robinson. And then instead of playing everyone at a position, throw Ellington in at the two.
Yeah, so Bullock when he comes back.
Yeah, you could throw your boy Bullock in there. And then it's like, so you have RJ as the three, which is probably going to be his more natural position. Knox at the four, where he's going to have a lot better chance of succeeding, because right now his handle is so bad as a wing, he has no chance of creating shots when there's two other big guys in there.
Right.
So even though you're taking out your best three-point shooter nominally, you're still probably giving the guys more space.
And you're 100% right about that, but the issue is they're going to keep playing Randle because the front office doesn't want to look like idiots and get fired for giving him a giant contract.
It's too far gone at this point.
No, but I agree with you, but I'm saying that is literally the issue. You need Morris to compensate for Randle. If you didn't have either of them, it'd be a net neutral. But I'm hoping, I mean, down the stretch of the year, once they're so far and away removed from playoff contention, it's not even a thought, obviously. I mean, anyone with a brain knows that's not going to happen. But once that's a certainty, I hope they go that direction. I hope they play the young guys. Because to me, it was such a mystery early in the season how they could possibly be worse than last year. Because the talent is so much better. Last year's team on paper was so much worse than this year's. And yet, offensively, they're significantly worse than they were last year, at least under Fizdale. So I expect them to start playing those young lineups. And the only reason they were better last year was because they at least had guys during the second half of the year that complemented each other a little bit. And spacing around Mitch, which is a recipe for success.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, like, once they're, like, officially out of the playoff race, all that kind of stuff, Mills just, and Perry don't want to look like idiots. But, like, what more can they do?
There's no logic to any of it. I mean, honestly, that's me being an optimist. What if you want my real answer? I don't think they're ever going to go off of this group as long as Mills and Perry are there, and I don't think they're going to be fired before the end of the season because they want to keep justifying the offseason. And the thing is, under Miller, they can
not justifying at all if they're 8-24.
They want to justify it to an idiot in James Dolan. They don't want to justify it to us. And the fact of the matter is, they sort of can under Miller. Because I think the Knicks have a chance to win one out of every three games. And there are a lot of other people who cover the team. I mean, after they went on that initial run, I'm like, oh, they're pretty decent. And I never bought that because they played such a weak schedule the first few games under Miller. And I think Miami and Milwaukee and then that shit show against the Wizards sort of brought them back down to earth, made everyone realistic. But the fact is they are better, and that's enough for the front office.
Locked On Knicks, Locked On Nets crossover here. Marcus, Josh, Gavin in the house. Josh, before Gavin got here, you and I we're watching a little bit of Spurs-Mavs on TNT. Just to talk about that for a second, there were some interesting
decisions made, I'll say, by the broadcast there. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, Marcus, I'm very happy that we brought this up because it's something that I think needs to be addressed. These camera angles, first on the Christmas Day games yesterday, and then on the Spurs-Mavs game on TNT, so it looks like TNT and ESPN are in cahoots on this horrible angle. It's just atrocious. It's essentially an angle from up high. How do you even describe it?
They have one like from the backcourt also.
Yeah, from the backcourt, basically like showing the play as it unfolds. It's 2019. We've already found the perfect angle for watching basketball. We don't need to tinker with it. Any adjustment will be bad. They were also showing like the shot clock, in addition to having it on the bottom right of the screen, having it in like the like by the top of the key also. You don't need to have the shot clock twice. It's overkill. There's too many tweaks to all these broadcasts, and it's killing my user experience. It really, like, the constant kind of toying of the camera angle makes me nauseous. And one, I can't tell what's happening. It was so far up. I think it was the Lakers-Warriors game yesterday, or was the Warriors-Rockets game. The Warriors have so many, like, guys on two ways. Like, I can't tell who's Kai Bowman, who's Damian Lee, who's Jacob Evans, Glenn Robinson. I need to be right there. And this angle is not giving it to me.
Yeah, and I'll also say, like, when I worked at the NBA a couple years ago, I would have to cut together highlights, and sometimes, like, on the broadcast, they cut to this weird angle mid-play, and you, like, wind up missing, like, a really nice dunk or, like, a great swing to a corner three or something just because they're, like, trying to cut to this fancy camera angle they have, whereas if they just left it in this one shot, like, everything is consistent. You get this nice, great play, and so then it's, like, okay, it looks kind of sloppy if I throw this in. It was just upsetting. Gavin, do you have any takes on this?
You guys are really desperate for content. you're really milking the camera angle teat. I do have some takes on it.
broadcasting the Lakers-Clippers game for Hot Mic, you may have heard of it. You can, there are all the Locked On Nets fans listening. You could sign up using my promo code GAVIN23. You could have listened to me or Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson yesterday.
That seems like an easy call.
That's pretty funky. Gavin all the way. Anyway.
So you do it with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson?
Not exactly, Josh. It's kind of like if YouTube only had two users and one of them was really famous and the other one was me. Anyways, just from a broadcaster's perspective, from my couch, it was very hard to tell who people were when they went to crazy camera angles. And I sent an email to ESPN and I haven't heard back yet, so we will see how that goes. Josh, you want to do Mussolini's now?
Yeah, let's do a little Mussolini's.
Yeah, so this is a segment that we're introducing. It's going to run every so often. It's called Mussolini's. It's one of Josh's new segments. Josh, take it away.
Yep, Mussolini's, new segment that we're very excited for here on Locked On Nets. Essentially, I'm going to ask Marcus, and in this case Gavin, because he's still here, a few questions that are going to give me a quick yes or no answer. Okay, first one. Should Theo Pinson be able to be loaned to the Knicks and he's just the official cheerleader for both New York basketball teams? Yes or no?
I say yes, and I think it should be not just limited to basketball. He should be available for the Giants, Jets, Yankees, Mets, whoever needs him.
I think he should be given giant pincers and attack the worst fan at the end of every game.
I like that. We're going to use that. Send that to Brooklyn. Second, Elfrid Payton. Do we like his haircut?
I miss his old haircut. It was like The Weeknd or Basquiat. It was majestic.
I think he's been shooting slightly better without the haircut. And I want the Knicks to lose to get a better draft pick. So I don't like that he has new hair, I think.
Okay.
A lot of negatives there.
Not really sure where that one went. Gavin, Henry Ellenson, Wilson Chandler, DeAndre Jordan. Which of those three, or Kenny Atkinson, that'll be the fourth, who do you miss the most on the Knicks?
I thought you were going to do like a F, Mary, Kill type of
thing. No, I was not going to do that.
Henry Ellenson, Wilson Chandler, who's the third
DeAndre
one?
DeAndre Jordan or Kenny Atkinson.
Oh, Wilson Chandler was really great his 1 year on the Knicks before he stupidly traded for Melo. So Wilson Chandler.
There you have it. That's the first edition of Mussolini's.
So that'll do for Mussolini's, and that'll do it for this edition of the Locked On Knicks and Locked On Nets podcasts. You can get these podcasts wherever you get them, be that Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, I know Josh is a fan of. Make sure you follow us at Locked On Nets. Follow at Locked On Knicks as well. I'm at Marcus Barahal. Josh is at JMBass_. Gavin.
I'm at Podbean.
Gavin is at Podbean.
At Hot Mike 23.
At Podbean gives me gas 24.
Yeah, so make sure you tweet at that handle and ask all your Gavin questions there. Josh and I will be back soon. Nets play the Rockets on Saturday. Gavin, when's the next Knicks game? We'll see. It's sometime in the near future. Until next time, be well. Bye.